Hi, everyone. Welcome and thank you for tuning into The Animal Files, the podcast where we expose the truth, science, and spirituality of pet care and provide you with the wisdom and tools you need to raise happy and healthy companion animals. My name is Victoria, an animal spirituality facilitator and integrative energy practitioner.
And my name is Miranda, an animal health technologist and pet care safety expert.
Let's dive in, shall we?
Hello and welcome to the Animal Files podcast. Thanks for joining us. A few weeks ago, we talked about introducing cats and we offered you some suggestions on how you can introduce your cats to each other when bringing a new cat into your household. And today, we are going to help out all you dog people out there. We're going to start talking about how to introduce your dogs to each other when bringing a new dog into your home. And you may think, isn't this the same process? Well, yes and no. There are definitely some differences, and we are going to get into that today. So I'm going to let Miranda take it from here, and we are going to get into the nitty-gritty of what you need to do when you are bringing a new dog into your home and introducing them to your old dogs.
Well, I think, first of all, we have to remember that cats and dogs are very different species.
Yeah. Just a little bit.
Yeah. And how they interact with each other, how cats interact with each other, how dogs interact with each other, and how cats and dogs interact with each other are going to be all very different. Plus, you got to remember personality also plays a factor in that as well. Mm-hmm. But barring personality, the difference between introducing cats to each other compared to dogs is that cats are much more territorial and they can have a lot of difficulty in accepting outsiders. Dogs, on the other hand, although they can still be territorial, they are usually much more social and they're used to living in social groups. Mm-hmm. With cats, they usually need to have a visual and physical barrier in the initial stages of introduction. Dogs, though, they can usually accept more direct interactions. There's going to be different dynamics that are at play during cat introductions because they use primarily body language and scent. When we're introducing dogs, they rely mostly on vocal communications and physical engagement. Another thing with cats is that they can feel highly threatened if they see that their personal resources and their environment are being utilized or changed by a new cat, or possibly even a new dog if it's a cat and dog being introduced to each other. Mm-hmm. Dogs, however, they can be much more willing to share their resources sooner, and they're not as attached to their environment as cats are.
Yeah, we've mentioned several times that cats find security in their environment, dogs find security in their people. So this is probably a good place where that would come into play. Mm-hmm. So when you shake up a cat's environment, that's going to affect them more than shaking up the environment for a dog. Because mm-hmm. as long as their people are there, they'll be like, okay, well, now I can be more in an observational mode. I don't have to be so territorial because my people are still my people. It's just something in my environment. So it's a different, I guess, a different outlook on life. Mm-hmm. The perspective of a cat and the perspective of a dog are very different in this particular circumstance.
Yeah. And both of them are still pretty attached to their routines. Mm-hmm. So if you have, for a cat, if you both change their environment and their routine, this can be very stressful for them. Whereas dogs, if you change their environment, but the routine basically stays the same, they're going to still feel a lot more stable.
Yeah.
But there are still many similarities when you do introduce new dogs to each other in a household that is going to help support, or it's going to help provide a smoother and safer transition. So let's start with what you need to do to prepare yourself for this introduction.
So get out your notebooks. Time to start taking notes. We haven't said that in a while. Bring out that Animal Files notebook.
So if possible, take some time to become familiar with how to recognize body language communication of dogs. How do dogs in general communicate with each other through their body and through vocalizations? because this is going to help you become aware of how each dog is responding to each other. Like cats, you want to ensure that each dog is going to be up to date on their vaccination and parasite prevention and make sure that they don't have any potential contagious illnesses. You're still going to want to provide separate spaces for each dog. Now, you don't need to necessarily have a barrier in between like you do with cats, but they still need to have their own space because in the beginning, they're not going to be wanting to share beds and share toys and share blankets and all of that kind of thing. So that also includes when you're feeding them. Don't feed them all together in the beginning. Separate the locations that you're going to be feeding them in. And ideally, if you have more than one person, then you can have each person sort of feed each dog at the same time.
Yeah.
Instead of feeding one dog and then having to move over to the other place and feed the other dog. Because then the timing gets to be kind of off and can create challenges that way.
Yeah. And it's kind of better if the dogs find the routine with each other as well.
Yes.
So you don't want to have a dog saying, well, I get fed first and then you get fed. You don't want to create that type of thing. So the one thing I want to mention that if you do have two people in the household and you can feed the dogs at the same time, that you switch places every so often. So each dog is used to you feeding them. Let's just say it's a brother and a sister and a new dog. So you have the brother feed one dog, you have the sister feed another dog. And then the next day you have them switch places. And so the sister will feed the first dog and then the brother will feed the second dog at the same time. So the dogs get that sensation of both of these people are there to care for me. And so they don't create that bond with just the one person. It just helps with the transition. And it also will help the current dog to understand that there's similarities there, that there's not a real territory of people that they need to defend because they get used to and associate that. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if I'm saying it clearly, but
yeah, I think you're making a really good point in that, you know, we don't want the dogs or even cats to associate feeding with one person because if something happens and the person who normally feeds them is not going to be available, maybe they end up in hospital, maybe they're late from work, whatever the case may be, then the cat, the dog, or whatever pet it is that you have may potentially not accept feeding from somebody that they haven't been fed from before.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you said it better than I did. But I also want to add, when it comes to like toys and stuff like that, I mean, treats, I consider that in the food thing, but like in toys, make sure when you bring in a new dog that that new dog has something of their own. See, I know with my cats, I still have toys that my cats 20 years ago were using. They're still fine. And even though the catnip is probably stale, they still get used, which is very strange. I don't know if that's going to be the same with a dog because there is more of a, even though cats are more territorial, I think there's more possessiveness in dogs. So a dog, if they have a toy that they love and then all of a sudden they have to share that toy right away, they may not be so keen with that, but they may share it eventually, like Miranda had mentioned. So make sure when you're bringing in a new dog, that that dog has something that he can call his own or she can call their own as well. And then once they get to that point where they do feel like sharing, it's not going to be a thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think you have to be careful with that, though, because if you do give them their own toy and they sort of develop this idea of this is my toy, they may not choose to share it later on and we could be encouraging possessiveness. So
yeah, I can see that, but I think that's on the onus of the owner to make sure that there's no need for extreme possessiveness. But what I'm saying is for the sake of the original dog, that original dog is not going to want to share its toys right away. It might take a little while. So you don't want the other dog to feel like it can't have anything. That's what I'm saying. Like I'm thinking more in the mindset of the dog that they come into a new space and nothing is theirs. that type of thing. It might help with the transition.
I think that's why it might be better that in the introduction phase that you put toys away and only bring them out when you are going to be interacting with a specific dog.
Okay.
And you're not just leaving it in their kennel or leaving it in their bed or whatever. You're just, you have set times that you give them these toys. Because I mean, obviously you don't want to prevent them from having any access to toys or anything during the introduction phase. But if we sort of have like this play session where they have this opportunity to play with the toy, but then you put it away, then maybe that's going to help discourage this possessiveness over a particular item.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And we have mentioned in many, many, many of our podcasts that when it comes to dogs, there's a lot of dogs you don't want to leave their toys just kind of hanging around because you may have a destroyer. They may end up swallowing something. They may eat a piece of it. So that I can see that, you know, I'm not a dog person. So I'm seeing it through the lens of a cat mom. And I get that. That makes a lot of sense. So yeah, if you're having a play session and then you're removing the toy, then they don't have the ability of, I don't want to say ability, but the opportunity to become overly possessive over a toy.
Mm-hmm. And you may not be able to play with both dogs at the same time to begin with.
Yeah.
So you might have to have individual play sessions and still have a new toy for the new dog so that you're not using the toys of your current dog or dogs to play with a new dog.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
You know, because the dogs that are already there, they're going to smell and taste that.
The toy.
So that could create some challenges.
Yeah. I've just seen a couple conversations or, well, I don't know, conversations, videos or whatever, where you actually have a dog that is overly possessive over a toy when it comes to other animals. And I'm just trying to think if there's an easy way to avoid that when you're bringing another animal. You know, I guess obviously it depends on the dog that you already have.
Yeah.
If you have a dog that's very possessive over things, then maybe it's not a good idea to bring another dog into the house. But if you have a dog that has more of a kind of low-key demeanor and you see him in the dog park and they welcome a lot of dogs, that it would probably be easier. So again, we're bringing up individuality, but
yeah, there's a potential too that if you're adopting a dog and bringing it in, you don't necessarily know what their background is, so they could also have some level of possessiveness before you even bring them in.
True. Yeah. So make sure you know your dog. That would be part of the preparation that we talked about in the beginning of this little section. That first, you kind of need to know if your dog is ready and willing to accept another dog or even another cat. Like if you have a dog and you want to bring in a cat, you got to make sure that that dog is willing to accept a cat. I mean, I know a cat's going to smack them across the nose to get out of line, but there's also dogs that have a history of being cat aggressive. So you need to know the animal you have and to see if it's actually even a viable option to bring in another animal into your household.
Right. Which brings so I us guess to that, the next point.
I was going to say, that's a good transition to our next point.
Yeah. That it's really important for you to understand each dog's temperament, their behavior, and their socialization history so that you can try to anticipate any potential challenges that could occur. So ask yourself, is one dog shy or nervous around other dogs? Do any of the dogs maybe not fully understand dog social behavior? Because sometimes if dogs are weaned too early or if they had a mother that didn't train them properly or they came from an incompetent breeder, then they may not have had the opportunity to learn appropriate dog social behavior.
Good point to leave the listeners with.
Yeah. And also, how have any of the dogs reacted to other dogs when you've taken them for a walk or taken them to any off-leash areas?
Yeah. Individuality. You got to know your dog. You've got to know your dog before you even make this big step. Because this is a big step. It may not seem like a big step to you, but it's a big step to your animal and the new animal you're bringing into the house. So it's not something to take lightly. So make sure you're prepared. make sure you understand, you know, the animals that are residing in the homes currently, and then make your judgments from there. Mm-hmm. Huh, so that was a quick half. Well, when we come back, we are going to offer you a little bit more insight into this process of actual introduction, because what we just talked about, that was the pre-step. So I hope you wrote that stuff down. So we'll see you in a little bit. Hi, everybody. Miranda and I would like to thank you so much for joining us as we begin season 4 of the Animal Files podcast. This season, we have so many great topics and fantastic guests to share with you. So we would like to invite you to join us each week as we bring you the information you need to help you, your pet, and your family truly thrive. And if you want even more information, be sure to check out our website, theanimalfilespodcast.com, where we got lots of resources, and you can even connect with us on our socials. Now that that's out of the way, let's get back to the conversation. And we are back. You are listening to the Animal Files podcast, and we are talking about how to properly introduce a dog to another dog, or maybe even another animal, but we're focusing mainly on dog. The first half, we talked about the steps you need to take to prepare yourself and get your thoughts together before you actually do the physical introduction. And the first thing we're going to start talking about is gradual introduction. What do they need to know about gradual introduction?
The best way to start this is to not introduce your dogs in your home, because it's better if they can have a neutral territory that they can meet each other in. And ideally, to be quiet so that there isn't going to be a lot of distraction, because this is going to help to minimize any potential territorial behavior. Now, we did say cats are a lot more territorial, and we are introducing cats within a cat's territory, but cats are a little more difficult to try to put into a neutral territory.
Yeah.
unless you happen to be like walking the cats together outside of the home, which most people aren't doing.
I know. Yeah, we're not walking our cats like we walk our dogs. At least most of us aren't. And there may be a few out there, but those cats have already established that they're okay with that. So,
yes. So you really don't want to be taking them to a dog park or an off-leash area, because there's going to be so many distractions. It is a neutral area, but there's going to be way too many distractions, because there's going to be other people and other dogs. You want to be able to walk the dogs together or take them to some kind of outdoor space. Possibly maybe a public skating rink. Like, I'm talking about an outdoor one, not during the winter when it's full of ice, but if it's during the time where there's no ice and nobody's using the skating rink, this could be a really good place to do that, because there isn't going to be other dogs or people running around, and they have the opportunity to have the space to be apart from each other and engage as they sort of choose.
Yeah.
Now, if you don't have that kind of option, maybe you could consider a schoolyard, but I don't know about where you live, but where I live in the city that I'm in, they have a bylaw saying you are not allowed to have dogs in schoolyards. That doesn't stop people from doing that. There's a lot of people who still take the dogs to the schoolyards.
Of course, there's always going to be somebody breaking the law.
But just so you know, that there is that potential that you could get a fine if you do that, and there is that type of bylaw.
Yeah, there are places. I mean, I know in this country, we don't have a lot of, at least where I am at, maybe in the north of our country, you may have ice skating rinks that are able to be used, not in the winter, but we do have a lot of different dog parks. I pass a couple all the time. There's hardly ever any dogs in there. So if you can kind of do your reconnaissance work and maybe use a dog park when it's not being used. You know, like the one dog park I pass by near my mom's house, I never, ever see dogs in there, but it's there. And that's in the middle of the day. So I'm sure there's other dog parks out there that have moments where there is nobody using it. So maybe schedule something like that, because the dog parks will be closed off. You don't have to worry about them running away or anything like that. And you'll be able to supervise them a little bit better. Or, you know, like maybe a little city park that's got a fence around it. There's not a lot of people. You know, I'm sure we all have these places that are in our municipalities that don't get used as often, or there's moments where nobody's using them. So do your research and find a place that you could do it. And if you have a friend who's got maybe property, you know, bring them to their front yard or something like that, a backyard where there's no other dogs, where it's enclosed, you know, it's a neutral. Like there's options out there. So just kind of think about what your options are available to you.
Yes. Finding an enclosed space though could be pretty challenging, because we have very few public enclosed spaces here in Edmonton where dogs can run around safely.
Yeah. I think it all depends on, because we have a lot of things like that around here. So I think it depends on where you live. So do your research and find what's best near you.
Mm-hmm. And maybe it might also, you might have to consider timing. So, you know, if the skating rink is really the only option you have, then maybe the best time to try to introduce a new dog into your family is going to not be during the winter when the skating rink is going to be used.
True. And if you don't have any of that and you just have to walk them, there are ways to do this. So let's move into, like, if you're going to take a walk together, there are a couple things that you might want to think about doing.
Yeah. So when you take your dogs into an outdoor space or take them for a walk together, you need to plan for this to take some time. Just going for a 15-minute walk is not going to be sufficient. That's not giving them enough time to get used to each other, to sort of interact with each other, and for you to kind of be able to observe how they are with each other. Because if you have to have them on a leash, you might have to keep them apart from each other to begin with, because they may not engage in a friendly way initially. You want to be able to have each dog to feel like it has its own space and allow them to initiate when they start to come together and engage more. We don't want to force it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some differing opinions about how to do this. One suggestion is that it's better to walk one dog behind the other to begin with and observe their behaviors, and then alternate the dog that was behind you move in front. And I think that this is designed to try to see if one dog is sort of interpreting maybe dominance or something like that in relation to this, and how they're accepting this. Maybe one is going to be uncomfortable being the one behind. Maybe the other one is going to be uncomfortable with leading. So this is all about observing how they are behaving. But this is why you need to become familiar with what is natural communication between dogs, because otherwise you could completely overlook how this engagement is happening, how they're responding or reacting to what's happening. Then slowly you want to move towards walking both dogs or all dogs, depending on how many you have, side by side. Now, I think Cesar Millan sort of talks about this as being sort of the pack mentality, where when they're side by side, there's nobody leading, there's nobody following, there's no sort of hierarchy happening or dominance thing happening. They're all kind of like on an even playing field.
Yeah, I saw something very interesting. I just want to interject this because I didn't know that this was a topic we were going to talk about today when I was driving yesterday. And I was heading to my mom's house, and where I live, there is a hiking trail that goes along one of the roads. And now that we don't have leaves on the trees yet, you can see the people walking. And I saw something never seen before on that hiking trail. Normally it's just one or two people here and there. I swear, this one guy had 20 dogs with him. Oh. So he must have been a dog walker,
probably
of some sort. And it looked like they were all pretty large dogs. Like, he's been doing this for a really long time. All of the dogs were all walking perfectly with him as he was leaving the pack. I didn't see leashes or anything because I was driving. I wasn't going to pay too much attention because I needed to keep my eyes on a windy road. But I saw this huge pack of dogs and one person, and all of the dogs were walking in unison, totally calm, totally cool, totally chill. And it was the most incredible thing I'd ever seen. And no dog was like leading. It was, they would kind of like, you know, one dog would get like a couple steps behind the other one, and they all kind of walked in sequence almost. He had a couple of stragglers in the back, but they were still keeping up the same pace. It was fascinating to me. Fascinating. I had never seen that many dogs being walked by one person ever in my life, especially on a hiking trail, because this was not a paved trail. This is like a moderate hiking trail.
Okay.
Where you have to have your hiking boots on and stuff like that. It was fascinating. And ultimately, I think that's what you're talking about. Nobody's really leading. You're walking side by side. And it was a clump of dogs all walking in unison. It was fascinating to me. So that's what came to my mind when you said that. I think that's what we're aiming for.
Yeah.
Now, I want to stipulate that unless you are seasoned, do not walk that many dogs at one time.
Yeah.
Because that's not going to be good.
Yeah.
This dude obviously was highly experienced in what he was doing because of the way it looked. It looked like it has been going on for 10 years. Like, this is the way this dude works. Like, he's probably an animal behaviorist that's been walking dogs and doing dog walking and stuff like that. I mean, this was up leveled. So unless you have that much experience, do not walk that many dogs at one time. Even five dogs walking at one time, unless they are all your five dogs and they get along really well, don't do it. But it was just fascinating what I saw yesterday when you were explaining that whole conversation about nobody's leading. They're walking side by side in a group, in a pack, in sync, totally cool and chill. And that's what your aim is when you bring in a new dog.
Yeah. You want to be able to have acceptance of each other. There are going to be situations where there could be signs of dominance being shown, which is usually fine if the dogs sort of accept their place. But if you have two or more dogs who want to sort of share that top dominant spot, and neither one of them is willing to give in, then this could end up, like we said with the cats, this could end up being one of those situations where it's not going to work and you might have to find a home for the new dog. So keep that in mind. I don't know if that happens very often. I think most cases dogs will accept each other.
You're going to get those few that don't, though.
Yeah.
Again, individuality. You got to know your dog. If you don't know your dog, don't even think about getting a second until you know your dog. You need to feel confident in yourself as a dog owner and in your current dog before you even think about bringing someone else in. That's just common sense. Now, you may have a dog that'll be like, oh, cool, a new friend. And you may not have to do this stuff. But that's also probably going to be a little bit rare, maybe not as rare as the one that won't accept any dogs, but, you know, individuality. You know, we say that, but every animal is different. Every animal has their own personality, and you cannot put either a dog or a cat or a ferret or a rabbit or a horse or a cow or anything under one big umbrella that says all dogs are the same, all cats are the same, all horses are the same, because that's not reality. You have to know your own animal.
So coming back to this process of walking them side by side, and again, I just want to reiterate that this might not happen really quickly. You might have to keep space in between to start with. But once you do get them to walking side by side, then this is going to help to remove focus on each other because of what we said. You're not going to have a leader. You're not going to have a follower. It's going to help to reduce this dominance issue. But you're still going to need to continue to observe their behaviors closely.
Absolutely.
Now, I looked at a bunch of different sites from different dog training experts and how they suggest doing this. in regards to whether or not you should keep a leash on the dogs or not. So there are some that say that using a leash is going to help to maintain control of your dogs, and that using a leash can also help maintain some distance so that either dog can be pulled away from the situation quickly if needed. I can understand that, but maybe it's not ideal for all situations. There are other opinions that say if you put a leash on the dog, it's going to restrict the dog's ability to behave naturally during the greeting, that the leashes could get tangled and end up evoking a reaction in one or both or all dogs, that a tight leash could add stress, and then the stress could lead to aggression. There's another opinion that when you use routine on-leash greetings, that this can create an expectation in your dog that she will be able to greet every single dog he or she sees. And the last opinion is that it's good to keep the leashes on until you are starting to do a more intimate introduction based on what the dog's body language is communicating. So take that for what it's worth. Neither one of us can say for sure which opinions are better or which ones are not. I think it's going to really depend on the dog.
Yeah.
And you being able to understand your dog's personality.
Yep. It's really important. I know we keep harping on it, but knowing your dog's personality and typical behavior, knowing your dog's personal way of communicating is what is the most important thing. You can't just, again, blanket your dog under all dogs are the same, because that's not going to work, especially when introducing another animal. And we have to remember that dogs find security in their people. And if a dog has taken it upon himself to protect you, and the new dog has an energy that the old dog doesn't really like, it may attack the new dog because he's protecting you. So if you don't know your dog, if you don't know how they're going to react, do not bring another animal into the house until you learn how your dog is, so you can do it properly and safely, both for you and the new animal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, safety is definitely key. Safety and reducing stress.
Yes. And that goes right into this next point.
Yeah, because with some dogs, when they have a face-to-face, head-on meeting, for some of them, this can be extremely stressful when they've never met each other before.
Yeah. And stress is not always a good thing in any animal, because that can turn their normal behavior into possibly unpredictable behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Stress is a real thing, and animals feel stress differently than humans.
And this next point goes back to what we mentioned before about the sharing of toys and treats and things like that, where there could be an encouragement of possessiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Even when they're in a neutral environment, you might think, oh, well, you know, let's throw a ball for them. Let's toss a frisbee or something like that so that they can play and maybe play with each other that way. This is discouraged to use any ball, frisbee, or any type of resource that belongs specifically to one dog. Now, maybe it might be okay if you end up getting something new that doesn't have the smell of another dog on it. Maybe that might end up being accepted, but I'm not certain. There are also some dogs that are more of the chaser type than others.
Yeah.
So again, this goes back to knowing your dog and knowing their personality.
It's really important. We'll probably say that a few more times before we end this podcast.
This next tip comes from Cesar Millan. Whether this is a good option, a practical option, I'm not entirely sure, but he suggests that when you come back to the home after the walk, before you enter, try to set it up so that you and all the humans that are involved in this walk go in first. Then the dogs who already live in the home go in next, and then the new dog or dogs go in last. The reasoning behind this is supposed to be that you are all part of the pack. And this allows the dogs that are currently living in the home to allow or bring in the new dogs without feeling like their territory has been invaded.
And a certain level of, I guess that makes sense, but again, all animals are different. Mm-hmm. So you might not be able to do that in every situation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can see where he's coming from,
mm-hmm.
but again, you need to understand your own dog to know if that's going to work for you or not.
Yeah. And if you are a single person and you are doing this walk by yourself, which is probably not the best option, it's probably a good idea to have a friend or somebody to come with you on this.
Yeah. You walk one dog and they walk the other dog.
Right. Yeah. Because otherwise this whole introduction thing is going to be way more challenging if you're doing this all by yourself. Unless, of course, you've got one of those dogs that just accepts anyone.
I know. And they're out there. There's plenty of them out there. But I understand the concept.
Mm-hmm. It's suggested that you use positive reinforcement, treats, and praise so that you can help create a positive association between the dogs. Kind of like with training, you're rewarding the behavior that you would like to see.
Yeah.
So as we've been kind of talking about this, about observing your animals, what you're wanting to watch for in their body language is if they are showing any signs of stress, fear, or aggression. Now, the thing with these is that the signs can be very, very subtle.
Yep.
If they've gotten to the point where they are growling and lunging and doing things like that, you've already missed most of the signs that they've been displaying. This is why it is so key for you to become familiar with your dog's body language. First, learning about the general body language of dogs, but then more specifically, your dog's body language, because they may not be exactly the same. Now, even though you are encouraging positive interaction and you want to reinforce that, you also want to avoid forcing the dogs to be nice to each other.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. They have to do this on their own. And if it's not happening naturally, you're just putting more stress on them and you're not allowing them to be who they really are.
Yeah. And with stress comes unpredictability. So if you're forcing them to be quote unquote nice to each other, you are creating, in a sense, stress. And you do that too often. All animals have their limit of what they're going to take before they start lashing out. And if you're already not noticing the signals, you're going to miss this one by a mile. And you're going to have a full-on fight if you keep forcing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not even fair to the resident dog in the first place. You got to remember that that dog is not saying, I want a pet. No, you're saying that. So you're already forcing this new animal onto them to begin with. You have to let them navigate their own nature.
Mm-hmm.
You can't force anything on them. They have to do it their own way. And if they do it their own way, you're more likely to have success than if you force.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you need to be patient and allow them to become comfortable with each other on their own, if that is going to happen.
Yep.
Got to remember that if, because there's no guarantee of that. And if you decide that you want to punish one of the dogs because they're not behaving the way you want them to, that's not going to help the situation. It's just going to cause the dog you're punishing to lose their trust in you.
Yeah.
Now, as we kind of talked about before, if any of the dogs have not been properly socialized by their dog mom, or because they were weaned too soon, or because they were in an environment that didn't really support or allow it, if this occurs before this meeting, you could end up encountering challenges because that particular dog that wasn't socialized is not going to fully understand the cues being given by the other dog or dogs. Now, this happens quite a bit with puppies because puppies often have not fully learned the cues, but sometimes they don't outgrow that.
Mm-hmm.
Older dogs often have the sense that, okay, this dog is a puppy and doesn't fully know, and they will teach the dog without being too rough with it. you also want to consider that if you have dogs that are full of energy, they may not engage as well as dogs that have had a chance to release a whole bunch of their energy ahead of time. So if possible, you might want to try to engage each of the dogs separately, both mentally and physically, because when we're talking about energy, it's not just the physical energy. It's also being able to burn off energy in a mental fashion. So trying to find ways to help them burn off some of this energy beforehand could really make a big difference.
Yeah. Well, if you've been successful in the gradual introduction and you made it to the supervision and management section, there are other things that we need to know. Again, steps, not the same as cats, but there are still steps. So let's go into the next part, the supervision and management of the encounter now.
Well, like with cats, you're not going to just let them go off on their own and have at it.
Yeah, we don't want that.
Because they may literally have at it.
Yes.
So the ideal situation is that you want to also gradually increase the time that your dogs spend together, just like with the cats, but you want to do this with supervision. Because that way, if assuming that you have done your homework and have become familiar with their communication through body language and vocalizations, that you'll be able to become aware that a situation is starting to brew and you can mitigate that before something major happens.
Yeah. And maybe you have to go back to the gradual introduction or a few steps. Mm-hmm. You may do the two steps forward and one step back. That might be the way that these dogs work best. So you have to be able to be flexible with that. Mm-hmm.
Again, manage the resources such as toys, food, and attention so you can help prevent any conflict. You need to understand the level of possessiveness that each dog has so that you can anticipate any potential fights. As we mentioned before, look at feeding both or all of the dogs at the same time, but in separate locations. And that might just be on opposite sides of the kitchen. Doesn't necessarily have to be a completely different room. If you have one dog that you find is a slower eater, you might need to keep that dog that finishes sooner away from the other dog so that the slower eater doesn't have their food stolen.
Yeah.
Or feel stress or tension because the other dog is hovering over them. Control all of the toys at this time. So like we said, put them away and just have play sessions. Don't just leave them lying around. And provide each dog with his or her own bed and location for sleeping. So don't put the beds right next to each other. Maybe have them on different sides of the living room or something like that. And you need to be prepared to be able to intervene calmly if it's necessary to mitigate or prevent escalation of any conflicts. It's not going to help things if you start to get agitated, fearful, start yelling, or have some other kind of energy that's similar to that if your dogs start to fight. Now, I get that sometimes when that happens, that energy just arises very quickly without you being able to even be aware that it's happening. But if you do notice it happen, try to get yourself in a more calm state as soon as you can. Because if you're in this agitated sort of state, you're going to feed that energy to your dogs. They're going to feel that and could make the situation much worse.
Yep. If you remember our very first episode of the season, your animal is your mirror. So if your energy gets agitated, you are going to agitate the energy of your animals. So make sure that you can maintain a calm demeanor as the leader, quote unquote, leader of this pack. That doesn't mean dominator of the pack. That means leader of the pack, that calm, strong leadership. Mm-hmm. That's what works in a pack of dogs. That's what they're going to lean on, that canine instinct, that calm demeanor.
Again, build positive associations. this is going to help with the relationship that you are hoping that these dogs are going to have. So engage your dogs in shared activities such as walks and playtime and training sessions, because when they're engaged at the same time, you're not having one dog be left out, or it's just better to be able to do things with them at the same time. So there's no sort of like this leader, follower, dominant, not dominant sort of energy kind of going on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you've said it before, allow the dogs to develop their own relationship at their own pace without forcing interactions.
Yes. So what are some of the signs that it's actually going to work, or if it's not going to work?
Well, this is just a very sort of general sense, but when you become familiar with your dog's body language and communication, you'll be able to more easily identify signs of positive interaction, such as a relaxed body language, playful engagement, and sharing of resources. But if they are not feeling comfortable enough with each other, there could be signs of conflict that show up, such as their body language becomes very stiff. There could be growling, there could be snapping, or they could be staring at each other. Now, this is something we don't really consider because we like to look our dogs and cats in the eye.
They don't like that.
Yeah, this is a challenge to them, saying we're challenging them. Now, okay, granted, if you have a strong relationship, strong bond with your dog or cat, there may be a point where they accept this and they don't look at it as a challenge.
Yeah, because they're probably picking up your energy.
Yeah.
But if they haven't created those positive associations and all of that, they're not going to have that, emotional intelligence right away, because they don't know you yet.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know the other dog yet. So staring would be a challenge in that instance.
Yeah, if you've got the two dogs staring at each other, this is not friendly.
No, that's when you close a door and put a barrier between them.
Yes.
Yeah, if you got to that point and you are not making drastic changes, there's going to be a fight.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a fight, because that's just, you take all of those things that you mentioned, the stiff body language, the staring, the growling. If you're not paying attention to that stuff, and if that growling and barking stops, and they're just staring, you've pretty much crossed the threshold of point of no return.
Yeah.
You want to make sure that you have a way, whether you can close the door between them or do something to distraction will be your only key. And I don't know how much you're going to need if you have a dog that's really adamant that they're not going to accept this.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea what that level is. That's why you need to know your animal.
Yeah. And you don't want to get in between if you can help it.
No, because you'll be dead. I mean, you can get in between a cat, maybe have a couple puncture wounds that need to have a treatment from a doctor. But if you have a big dog, that could kill you.
It could.
It depends on how they get you.
Yeah.
So they're bigger animals. You don't mess with that stuff.
Well, I mean, you have the small dogs, so you could end up with a bunch of puncture wounds and not have any sort of life-threatening situations. But still, you will really want to avoid having to get in the middle, period. So trying to have something planned in advance that you can use as a distraction or put in between them before they actually start physically going at each other. But pay attention to their body language. That is going to be the main way to prevent any aggression.
Yep.
So let's assume now that you have gone through all this introduction process and everything appears to be hunky-dory. Now, how do you get to this long-term integration? So gradually, you want to start allowing your dogs to spend more unsupervised time together once you are certain that they have developed a positive relationship with each other. However, do not leave the dogs unattended and free to interact with each other until you are absolutely certain that they are comfortable with each other under a variety of situations.
Mm-hmm.
So this means if they're in their backyard and they've got like different distractions maybe happening, this is on walks and there's other people and animals around, whether you take them to a daycare or whatever it might be, these are all different situations and the dogs could react very differently in each of these situations. Until you are absolutely certain that they are comfortable with each other in these different situations, keep them in their own spaces up to that point.
Yeah.
And if this is the case, continue to provide, well, actually, whether or not you allow them to interact with each other on their own or not, you want to continue to provide individual attention and care to each dog so that you are not encouraging competition.
Yeah. And we have said it so many times. If you still have questions and you don't think you're up to it, who are you going to call? Well, you're going to seek professional help.
Not Ghostbusters.
I know. You're going to seek professional help. And again, this is part of the, you know, I think we talked about it last season where financially there are things that you need to make sure that you can handle. And if you are going to be introducing a new animal, then it's not just buying an extra dog bowl or an extra bed or whatever. Yeah, that's a financial thing because dog stuffs tend to be more expensive than cat stuffs because most dogs are bigger than cats. You also have to put aside some money or be willing to put aside some money that if you need it, you can call in professional help, mm-hmm. whether that be a vet that understands animal behavior a little bit more than your average vet, or whether you actually contact an animal behaviorist and they'll help you.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know when to seek that.
Yeah.
It's just important.
We need to remember that just because dogs are social creatures, this does not mean they are guaranteed to get along with each other. There are some dogs who are not going to be compatible with each other. And no matter what you do, you're never going to have a harmonious relationship between them.
And you need to make those arrangements if necessary.
If you don't want to always have to be on your toes and worrying about, oh, are they going to have a fight and injure each other? If that's kind of the feeling that you have, that is a really strong indication that this is not working and you need to think of what's best for the dogs.
Exactly.
And with dogs' social behavior, yes, they learn certain social behavior on how to interact with each other, but that is not the same as having harmonious behavior. Because as we said, there are so many different types of temperaments, so many different types of personalities. We don't necessarily know any past traumas or how they were raised or any of that. Especially if you are getting a dog that is from a rescue or an adoption agency.
Yeah. So there's a few other things that you need to consider as well. So what are some of those considerations as we close up this particular episode of The Animal Files?
Mm-hmm.
What are some of our last little tidbits of information that we want our listeners to consider?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of them I already mentioned earlier, and that's about puppies are not going to fully understand proper dog behaviors. And some adult dogs will be patient and gentle, but some adult dogs are not going to have the patience or be gentle with puppies.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you have to know your dog and see how they interact with other dogs or other animals. Another thing to consider is if you have a senior or a geriatric dog that you want to bring a younger dog into the home, the senior or geriatric dog may not respond well if the new dog is higher energy, more exuberant, especially if they are experiencing pain or just can't move as easily as before.
Yeah.
But sometimes when they're senior or geriatric, they also just don't have as much patience. Last consideration is that small dogs are at risk of injury if they are introduced to or even just playing with much larger dogs. So think of like a Chihuahua meeting a Great Dane.
Yeah.
A Great Dane might think that it's playing gently and, you know, just doing its thing and not really considering the size of the Chihuahua. And Chihuahuas, those type of dogs, or some other small dogs can think of themselves as a big dog. And realize what size they actually are.
Yep. Yeah. So you just want to be safe. You really want to be safe. You have to know your dog. And I guess that is probably the key takeaway, is if you are going to introduce a dog to your family and you have other dogs that are already residing in the home, you have to know your dog. You have to understand their personal way of communicating and their personal body language. You have to know that. So it doesn't matter whether you're bringing a large dog into a large dog home, or a small dog bringing a small dog home, or a small dog being brought into a large dog home, or a large dog being brought into a small dog home. You have to know your animal. Full stop. Full stop. And we have to make sure that when we make the decision to bring any animal into our home, whether it be a new cat to a house of cats, whether it be a dog to a house of dogs, you have to make sure that you are putting your animal's livelihood, thoughts, emotions, all of that before your own. Because I know there's some of us be like, oh, I'd love to have lots of animals. I'd love to bring this one. I'd love to bring that one. Without thinking that my dog may not accept it, but who cares? Because I want it. You know, that's our human way of thinking.
It is.
And we have to make sure that we include the animal in the conversation. Maybe not officially, or maybe you actually do have a conversation with your animal saying, we're thinking about bringing an animal into this home. How do you feel about it? And see how they react, because they may not understand every word you say, but they'll understand your energy. I have no idea if I'm ever going to have more than one cat at a time, because we travel with our cat, but there may come a time, like when I had Maisie. Now, yes, she was feline leukemia virus positive, so I couldn't bring an animal in for that reason, but she was also a very, I guess, cat that sits in her own place. Like she was the queen. I don't think she would have accepted another animal. Now, Abby, on the other hand, she may. So dogs are the same way. A dog may be happy just having them, you all to themselves, and may not want to share. Then another dog be like, oh, good. I want more friends than you can even handle, you know, but still keep them in the conversation. Let them dictate whether you bring one in or not. And you can only do that if you know your animal. So I guess that's my final thought. My key takeaway is don't forget your animal's feelings.
And, you know, you can always talk to animal behaviorists and trainers and that to get some resources on how to become familiar with dog communication and body language. I'm pretty sure there's free resources out there as well that will help you. And I think we did a podcast episode about it. We also have an episode where we talked about different dog body language and communication, as well as cats. And you can refer to that as well.
Yeah. So if you have any questions, you know, you can always reach out to us here at the Animal Files Podcast. So you can just email us at theanimalfilespodcast@gmail.com. And we also have resources on our website. We do have some behaviorists in our resources page. We have animal communicators on our resources page. So there's a resource of people that we trust that you could ask to help you as well. So you can just go from their link and get to what you need to get to. It's all there for you. And while you're on the website, if you want to, you can read all about us. You can listen to our podcast straight from the website, get our social links, and you can even support us if you want. So check out all of those links on the website. Anything else you want to add, Miranda, before we close for the day?
I think you've covered everything.
Well, all righty then. So I hope you enjoyed this. I hope you wrote everything down. If not, just rewind us and then write it all down again. Listen to this podcast all over again, because there's lots in here. We always give you a lot of information, and we will see you next time on the Animal Files Podcast. Bye for now. Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed the show, please be sure to rate, review, and recommend the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you want some more great info, be sure to check out www.theanimalfilespodcast.com.